All right, it is now my privilege to introduce tonight's speaker from Visalia, going on 3 years. Let's give it up for Nolan.
Hello, I'm an alcoholic. My name's Nolan. I really don't know when my sobriety date is. I just know, I remember January 5th, 2016 is the day that I chose to change my life. I had stopped using drugs and drinking it had to be a week or two before that, but I'm not sure. But I know on January 5th, 2016, I was in the hole in prison, and I looked at myself in the mirror, and I hated myself. And that's the day that I chose to use as my sobriety date, and I'm glad to have it. It's coming up. It's going to be nice to celebrate that. It'll be my first one outside of prison. I got out in July 2nd. Got clean and sober in prison. It was a really low. So I guess when I've come to these speaker meetings before, I went years ago, and I go now. And I went when I was in prison, but I didn't go for a few years when I was running amok. When I was in prison, the first few years I didn't go, and I chose to start going a few months after my date on January 5th. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about myself. Usually when I go to these speaker meetings, I want to hear, you know, their experience and, you know, what got them to that point, or to the point that they decided to change their lives, and then how they're making it work, you know, and it's different for everyone. So I'm just going to tell you what I know, and that's what I've lived through. So I was born in Bakersfield. I moved to Visalia when I was 2 with my family. Had a really good family. Mom and dad are supportive. I have 2 brothers, good guys. I was a spoiled kid. You know, we weren't real wealthy when I was a kid, but we were a blue-collar family at that point. And, you know, my pop started doing well when I was in high school, and he traded in the blue-collar for a white-collar, and he liked to party a lot. You know, I remember as a kid, I would think about having fun. The fun memories I have as a kid are going to Disneyland. You know, my parents would do stuff like that for me. They would take us on trips to Florida or, you know, to Wild Water Adventures, that kind of crap. And I loved it. I was a blessed kid. And then as my life progressed and I got a little older, I was in high school. I remember seeing, you know, I'd see parties at my house, and I'd see the older guys. When I was 13, 14, I'd see the adults. Not necessarily my parents all the time, but just family, friends, get-togethers. They're drinking. Everyone's drinking, having a good time. And so I started to relate, you know, alcohol to fun. And then as I got a little bit older and had access to alcohol and to drugs, to alcohol mostly, but in high school, you know, I started drinking. So if I was going to go out to a party, I was going to drink. And if I was going to have people over to my house, I was going to steal liquor out of my dad's cabinet, and I was going to hide it from my parents. So I learned real quick that I had to hide it. You know, it's something I continue to do throughout my life, is hide my alcoholism and my addictions. Another thing I want to tell you is I'm not going to be able to tell my story without talking about other substances, because that's part of it. You know, I started with alcohol, and I definitely am an alcoholic. I have a problem with alcohol. I can't drink and stop. It's never happened. Most times when I drink, I don't remember what I did that night. You know, I'll wake up the next day, and I know I have to apologize to some people, but I just don't remember who, you know? And sometimes I don't, man, I have so many mornings that I would wake up and remember these little flashes of the night before and be so disgusted with myself. But that didn't stop me. You know, I kept doing it. So anyway, as I keep telling you about my life, there's going to be drugs involved. So that's just the way it is. So I got a little older. I'm 16, 17, 18. Smoked pot a few times. You know, not really habitually or anything, but I would drink almost every weekend, and any time I would have friends over, we would drink. I went to college. I went down to San Diego State, and that's when it really got bad. It was, you know, first time living away from home, so I'm down at San Diego State, and I pledged a fraternity because I thought that would get me laid, you know. And so I'm in San Diego and partying all the time. I'm at these frat parties and a lot of drugs around, a lot of alcohol, and I partook every single time. And I would, you know, I had some fun. You know, it wasn't bad yet. You know, it was getting there because I was starting to manipulate, and I lied about it. You know, my family and my close friends, they didn't know I was doing cocaine and getting blacked out drunk and going to Mexico. And I remember one time, see, here's an example of how manipulative and full of shit I can be. Excuse my language. I would, as a pledge in a fraternity, those idiots would, you know, they'd haze you. So one time they took us down to Mexico. They put us in the back of a truck. This was in 98, so it wasn't as strict as it is now. They put us in the back of a pickup truck and threw a tarp over the top of it and drove us down to Tijuana, the south part of it. So we're not close to the border anymore. And they made us, before we got in the truck, they made us stand in a line, and we they called it horse races. So everyone would drink a beer, and then you'd go to the back of the line, and you'd go to the back and you'd try to beat the line next to you. You know, you'd try to win the race. The race never ended, and you know, it didn't end until someone was throwing up. All right, the race is over now. Jump in this truck. So they took us down to Mexico and dropped us off, took our wallets and our IDs, and it was a competition to see who can get back first. And so, you know, we're staggering back, and we find this little, I think it was a gas station. It was in the middle of nowhere. So I forget how I did it. I don't know how I got the money. I might have had a credit card memorized or something. But I called MAD, Mothers Against Drunk Driving, and I told them, if they don't come pick us up, we're going to drive. So they got us back to the border, and we got across the border. It took a while. It's funny, but it's a horrible thing. I manipulate. These are mothers who have, you know, they've gone through some stuff. And, you know, it was, at the time, I thought I was clever as heck. But it's a pretty ugly thing to do. Yeah, so that's just an example of how full of crap I am. So as my college days progressed, college got to be less and less important to me, and drinking and using drugs got to be more and more important. By the time I was 22, 23 maybe, I wasn't going to school anymore. I was... my mom's out there. She's going to hate hearing this. But my family would send me money to pay my tuition. And I had a friend at a bank that would cash the check for me. So I would take the money that they were giving me to go to college, and I would trade it. I would take it to the bank, and this girl that worked there would sign it and give me the cash. So I'd spend that money on drugs and alcohol. And that was when things got really bad. You know, I at that point, I got addicted to opiates. So that was my next step. I had done pretty much anything you can think of up to that point. You know, I was a garbage can. If it was in front of me, I was going to do it. And I'm not proud of that. It's just, you know, that was my coping mechanism. So the whole time I'm drinking, blacked out drinking, and that was my way of forgetting all the crap that I was putting myself through, all the guilty feelings I had, because I'm not a bad person, But I was doing bad stuff, you know. So I knew that I was living I wasn't living a good life. I was not the person that I wanted to be. So I covered up those feelings of guilt with substance. You know, I tried to fill the hole. And it was a hole I was creating myself, you know. It's not because I had a bad family. It's not because I didn't have support or friends, or it's because I was living the life that I knew was... I knew I was doing the wrong thing every single day. So I had to get effed up every single day, you know, to forget about that. And it didn't work forever. You know, it stopped working. So opiates were the they got their hooks in me. You know, it's highly addictive. And I ended up going to rehab. I moved back from Chico. I went to San Diego. It's ruined my overstayed my welcome in a quick period. Then I went to Fresno, gotten myself in a little bit of trouble there. Got a DUI when I was 21. And back then they didn't even take you to jail for the night. So I didn't even get handcuffs put on me. So they dropped me off at a gas station, and I had to go to court, and it was a quick fix, expensive for my family, not for me. And didn't learn my lesson. I thought the way to fix that was to move to Chico. And so I moved to Chico. And good move. So a lot of you probably know about Chico. So I got real bad up there. And then when I moved back to Visalia, I brought with me my opiate dependence. And that became apparent real quick. One morning, I was at work. I usually had a job. You know, I like to tell people that I never got fired, but that's BS. I got fired a couple times. I knew they were going to fire me, so I quit is a better way to put it. I'd rather quit, you know, than get fired. That's the manly thing to do. So I get back to Visalia, and I'm working for a produce company down here, inspecting. And one morning they all left. They all went to the produce convention somewhere. I forget where it was that year. But I was the only one there, and they needed me to do some paperwork and go into the office. So I did. And I had run out of pills that day, so I was taking a different flavor. I was taking, like, I think Valiums and Xanax or something like that to try to ease the withdrawals. And then so I get to the office, and the office has a full bar. You know, these Xanax aren't really helping. So I started drinking Bloody Marys. It's like 7 in the morning. And by noon, I couldn't tell you what I did. I just know because of the evidence. By noon, I'm getting in my truck, leaving the office. I peeled out on the grass at the ranch, left a big old tear in the owner's yard. You know, it's the guy that owned the office, owned the house right next to it. And I wrecked on the way out, scraped the side of my truck on the post. It's like they had horses at this ranch, so there's this big 6x6 post with a fence, and I scraped, took off my mirror, I think, got on the highway, and rear-ended a car, a van actually, full of paisas. So I thank God, because otherwise I'm going to prison, right? So the guy gets out of the car, and the van, and he looks behind him, and he looks at me, and we both get out, and he says, "Everything's good, everything's good." I said, "Okay, let's go." So I got back in the car and took off. I ended up about a mile past my house. I missed my turn to my own house, which is weird. And I remember hitting the second car. It was on the... Actually, I probably shouldn't disclose too much information. It was on Caldwell somewhere, and I rear-ended someone else. This was 18 years ago, so I guess statute of limitations. So I rear-ended someone else and took off, hit and run. I rear-ended him, not real hard, but hard enough to put a dent in my bumper. And then I took off and opened my garage to my truck, or opened the garage and parked my truck inside and shut the garage and went to bed. And the next memory I have is my mom waking me up, asking me if I was at I forget exactly what she said because everything was kind of like wah-wah-wah in my head, you know. So she took me back to the office, and my boss asked me if I had done all that, and there's no denying it. There's gray paint on the post, so that was my last day at that job. And I ended up going to rehab, and that's when I was first introduced to the 12 steps and to AA. And so I got clean. I detoxed, got clean at rehab. It was in Santa Cruz. It's called The Camp. BS'd my way through that. You know, they thought, oh, this guy's got it. He's good. He's going to be fine. So I left and came back to Visalia. And I remember telling my family I was going to the gym. And I got a little pint of vodka, Smirnoff 100 proof, you know, and drank it. Went to the gym, but I just sat in the parking lot and enjoyed my buzz for a couple hours, and then went back and, you know, tried to hide the smell on my breath and all that. So it didn't take, you know, but I knew about it. So I had done the first three steps in that program. So, and I'd heard a lot of things out of the literature that they would read, and I knew that it applied to me, you know. I knew. But I wasn't ready to admit it yet, you know. I wasn't done. But I could tell people I was and BS my way to another drink. And then, so I joined the Marine Corps because I thought, I was embarrassed, you know. I went to rehab. Everyone's going to talk about me. You know, I'm worried about what other people think, not about me causing all these consequences in my life. So I joined the Marines, and I figured now everyone's going to say, oh, Nolan's the Marine. He's not the alcoholic addict that went to rehab. You know, he's got his shit together again. Excuse my language. And I drank throughout my whole time in the Marines. Even the first year, when you're really on leave, you're not supposed to be drinking when you're in training. And, you know, I got blacked out drunk every single weekend. I impersonated an officer one time at a club. Almost got arrested. There was a big sergeant that was going to kick my ass, and I pretended to be an officer so he wouldn't. Not smart. Probably better to take an ass whipping. I deserved it anyway. So, about 27 or 28, I'm back in Visalia again, and, you know, I have a girlfriend, and I got a decent job, and I'm out golfing, and I'm still drinking, you know. I'm still drinking all the time. It's just part of my life. I drink every time a football game was on, every time I was upset about something, every time I was happy about something. I would could either be celebrating or just trying to drown out the whatever pain I'd probably caused myself. So when I was 28, I got back into opiates. I was at the golf course, took a pill from a friend of mine that was, he was a fighter, so he had them in his bag, and I asked him for one, and the ball started rolling again. So a couple years go by, and my opiate addiction is in full swing. I'm married now. I'm living in a nice house, a really good job, making a lot of money. I'll probably never make that much money again. And I was 31 when I got that job. And then, but still, you know, I'm still screwing up all the time. I'm living paycheck to paycheck. You know, how's that work when you got a wife who's got a job as a teacher? And I have a really good job, and I'm still living paycheck to paycheck. It was a trip. I'm refinancing a company car. I don't even own the car, but it's got my name on the. So I figured out a way to refinance it. Yeah. I'm hiding all my drug usage and my drinking. You know, I had got myself into enough trouble where I started coming to these meetings again, not because I wanted to stop, because I wanted it to appear that I had stopped. You know, I did stop drinking because I was taking so many opiates I couldn't drink. I'd pass out. I'd get sick. But when I ran out of opiates, you can believe that I was drinking. You know. My opiate addiction got really bad, and I had spent every dime that I had access to. My wife ended up taking my ATM card from me. So, and my family was watching my spending because they knew something was up. They knew I was being a jackass, and I decided, instead of asking for help like I should have done, instead of actually applying these steps and asking for help from a sponsor or looking in the mirror and admitting I had a problem, I decided to rob a bank so I can keep using. You know, it took a few weeks to conjure up the huevos to do that. I don't know if you call it huevos, actually. It's the desperation and stupidity to do that. And I did it. Never been in trouble before. Well, not big trouble. I'd been in the drunk tank a couple times. But I decided to rob a bank. And I did it. And it was easy. I got away with it. A few weeks later, that money was dwindling. And it wasn't much. I mean, it was just stupid. I mean, just dumb. I could have made more by not using drugs, you know, for those weeks. So I robbed another one. And it worked. I got away with it again. The third one didn't work out so good. I got in a high-speed chase. There was a CDC sergeant. He worked at Corcoran. And he was in the drive-through window at the Wells Fargo that I was making a withdrawal from. And he saw what I was doing, and he's chased me, you know. And I thought that I ditched him, but I found out from the police report that they just told him, quit chasing the guy. You know, quit chasing him. You're going to kill somebody. I was driving through Tulare at like 90 and just running reds and stop signs and could have killed a kid or something. And I couldn't live with that. I don't think I could have. So thank God that didn't happen. When I thought I was in the clear, I started heading home. Had a bunch of family at my house for a barbecue waiting on me while I was robbing a bank. My cousin, my mom, my wife, a bunch of friends. Where's Nolan? Oh, he's on his way. Yeah. I saw a cop pull up behind me when I got to Caldwell and Demery. I thought maybe it was a coincidence, you know. Maybe I still got a chance here. Another one pulled up behind him, and then they lit me up. So I, you know, it all came crashing down. Like, holy sh! You really did those. You got to face the music, man. What are you gonna do? What are you gonna do? And I, for a split second, I thought just pull over, but that wasn't long. It was a split second. The biggest part of my brain is telling me the best way to deal with this is to just end it, man. Kill yourself. You can't face the music. You've dug too big of a hole. You've been lying to your family and friends for so long. Just hit the gas. Find the nearest telephone pole and ram it. So that's what I did. I took off my seatbelt, hit the gas, saw a telephone pole with no houses behind it. There's a little dirt lot behind it, and I hit it as hard as I could. I was probably going 55 and accelerating when I hit it. No seatbelt on. The telephone pole sheared, so it, you know, it broke and swung on the lines. So that didn't work. I went right through it, basically. So my head hit the windshield. I was kind of dazed. And I got out of the vehicle, and there's cops surrounding me. So I imitated going to my waist for a gun, which I didn't have. So they shot me. I got them to shoot me. So they shot me 7 times. mostly in my upper torso by my heart. Pretty lucky. I'm not crippled. I'm in the best shape of my life right now, and if that's not a higher power, I don't know what is. Went to prison for a long time. Because I had never been in any real trouble before, and because I was, because I was lucky, and because someone was looking out for me, they gave me 6 years with 85%. That's nothing for robbing three banks, and for going on a high-speed chase, and for resisting arrest. So, in prison, I continued to drink and use drugs. For the first couple years, I justified it by telling myself, who gives a crap? You lost your wife, you lost your house, you lost your job, your family, most of them won't talk to you. I didn't have any real friends left. I didn't think I had any friends left, but I did. They were just waiting to see, as those years went by in prison, That mentality got old. I felt like I had nothing to look forward to, and thinking that, oh, woe is me, who gives a crap, and that gets real old. Because I thank God I had family and a few friends that still did care, and I could tell, and I cared about myself too. Deep down, I really did. I knew that there's right and there's wrong, and what I was doing was wrong, and that's hard to look in the, it's hard to see in the mirror every day. I didn't like it. So I'm at Solano Prison. I was in Salinas Valley. I did some time in some really crappy places, and I'm sure some of you know what I'm talking about, unfortunately. But being a white boy in prison, man, it's not fun. It's rough. There's a lot of shit going on in there when you're with the business, so I'm in the hole. I'm fighting and doing crap I shouldn't be doing. When you're in those places and you're drinking and using, you're on the list, man. If something goes down, you gotta be part of it. And so I was for a while, and then on January 5th. I looked in the mirror and I hated myself. I hated myself. I hated the reflection I saw. And I tried to think logically about life at that point. Like, I tried to think, so what do I do? What's the next step? How do I get out of this? Is it possible? So I looked at it like black and white. And that's how I got through it. Is I can either just give up and say, screw it, and just, I knew it. I wouldn't last much longer if I kept doing what I was doing in prison. So that was option A, and then my other option was to start living right, to stop using, to stop drinking, to stop asking my family for money and for soups and beans and cheese and all that crap, and spending it on meth or whatever other drugs I can get while I was in there. So, am I gonna change my life or end my life? Was basically the point, the question. And thank God I chose to start living right. At that point in my life, I wasn't quite sure where it would take me. But I knew it couldn't get any worse. I was in the worst place, and I was in the worst place in the worst place. I was in solitary confinement in prison, And I come from a good family. I'm from Visalia. It's like, what are you doing, man? Why? What's the point of that, How did you do this to yourself? So it got real hard to justify living that way anymore. It was a really low bottom, really low. But it was mine. I didn't start using the 12 steps or going to meetings for a while. I think it was in March at some point. And the reason that I chose to use AA and to dive back into it is because I knew it worked. You know, like, it, and I'm not saying you have to go to AA. I'm not going to sit up here and tell you you can't get clean and sober if you don't do these steps. But I know if you do them and if you apply these principles and you take it seriously and put your mind to it and put your ass into it, it'll work, you know. It's worked for hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people. So that was enough info for me to try it, you know. It says in the book, you have to be as desperate as a drowning man. And I definitely was. And I still am. You know, I don't ever want to get even close to back to that point. And I know now that I'm a felon, it's going to be a lot easier to slip up and to end up back in one of those places. I mean, I could be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I'm probably going to get locked up just because of my record. I'll get out quick if I didn't do anything wrong. But they're going to lock me up if they even think that I did something wrong, or if I'm around when a robbery happens, or, you know, I mean, and those are consequences I created myself, but I'm able to deal with them today because I'm sober, you know. I'm sober, and it makes me happy to be able to look at myself in the mirror today, and that's a direct result of my sobriety and Alcoholics Anonymous. In March of 2016, I was with a guy in there. His name was Mike. He actually grew up here in Visalia, but he moved to San Luis Obispo, and he was doing 14 years for manslaughter. He was under the influence driving a car in between Morro Bay and San Luis Obispo, and got in an accident, and his girlfriend was in the passenger seat, and she got ejected from the vehicle and died. So and that was his second DUI. So he's doing 14 years. And he was heavily involved in the program, and he got me to, I liked him. He's a good, there's not many guys at that point, when I changed my program, that I wanted to talk to anymore. But he was one of them. Thank God. He's a good dude, you know. He got me to start going to these meetings, and he got me to, I volunteered. I was a coffee guy for a year. Became the recording secretary for the second year. Anyhow, he was my sponsor. He took me through the steps. It took me 9 months to get through the 12 steps with him. He had me write a ton. Drove me nuts. And then we'd meet on the yard in prison, and I'd go over my steps with them, which that's a sight on a prison yard. So I'm sitting there, and I'm going over these steps with him. He made me do the first step so many damn times because he didn't believe me, you know. And he kept telling me, that's the only step you need to give 100% on. Just give 100% on this first step, Nolan. Because if you don't believe your life is unmanageable, if you don't believe that, there's no point in even going on to the next step. So, after going through the first step, Mike, I think it took about 3 months, the first step. That was the longest one. Mike said, all right, go on to the second step. Now, this step, it's kind of like the first one. You got to give 100% on this step. Dirty. So, I really liked Mike, man. I thank God for him. And he's still in there. I think the earliest he can get out is 2023. He's my age. He's 30. No, actually, 39. I'm 38. I won't be 39 for a week. Yeah. So, after going through those steps with Mike, all of them. I mean, the 10th step plays a big role in my life, you know. Just admitting when I'm wrong and asking for forgiveness, you know, immediately, like that. you know, and so I'm wrong a lot. And I try to be honest now. Early in life, I learned that lying, man, that I could really take advantage of a lie. You know, I think the first lie, I was thinking about this earlier today, the first lie I ever told was to my older brother. The first lie I can remember. I'm sure I fibbed a few times. But I was about 5, and my older brother was 7, and I was trying to impress him. So I made up a story about school, like about a fight or something. He just totally fabricated it. And I had his attention. He was all ears. And it made me feel good. You know, I was cool. My older brother thinks I'm cool. So I don't know if that is why I kept lying, but I lied from at least from maybe before that point. But from that point on, you know, I'd twist the truth a lot. I try not to do that today because it feels really good to be able to tell the truth and to be able to stand behind what you just said, you know. And I don't have to hide anything today. I was telling my mom, I don't know, I think it was when I was still in prison, she was visiting me, because she would ask me questions, and I'd tell her the answer. And some of them are hard to hear, I'm sure. So I said, are you sure you want to ask me this many damn questions? Because you're not going to like the answers. I'm going to tell you the truth, so just be careful what you ask me. Please be careful what you ask me. Thank God she hasn't asked me a few yet. It's going to be a test. The 10th step is a daily, it's something I remember when I was in there, Mike had given me it was like a 10th step worksheet, and he wanted me to fill it out every day while I was doing my 10th step. So before I went to bed, you know, there's little questions you have to answer every day, and I really liked it. I need to get another copy of that, but it basically holds you accountable. You know, did you hurt anyone's feelings today? Do you think you owe anyone an apology? If you do owe someone an apology, are you going to do that tomorrow? You know, that plays a big role in my life. I don't have a lot of friends left. But the ones I do have are really good friends, and they mean a lot to me. So the last thing I want to do is lose those guys, you know. And my family, it's my actions and my alcoholism and my addictions, they've changed the whole family dynamic, you know. They've changed it. And I know that it's still good. It's still beautiful. You know, we love each other. We have a really good family. But it's different, man. I still feel guilt a lot, you know, especially around these times. I mean, I'm 38 years old, and I almost feel like I'm starting over again, which to me, it's a beautiful thing, you know, but it's not so easy for a normie to wrap their head around. My brothers, I love them both. They're great dudes. But I know I put them through hell, and it's hard to live with, you know. And then seeing them, they've got wives and kids, both of them. And I know they have problems. I mean, life's life. But, you know, it's hard for me not to feel a little jealousy. And then also, just, I want to kick myself in the ass and say, why didn't you figure this out earlier? You know, why'd it take so long? But it takes what it takes, you know. And I don't remember ever hearing someone stand up here and say something that clicked, so it's going to make me sober, you know. No one's going to save you. It's not going to happen. You have to save yourself. And in order to do that, you need to take action. You know, you can't just say, I couldn't just say, I'm going to quit tomorrow. I swear to God, I'm going to wean myself off these pills. I'm going to stop drinking. I'm going to do it tomorrow. I swear, you know. Tomorrow never comes, man. You have today, you know. Today is all you have. And thank God that on January 5th, I made that choice. Thank God. And after working these steps with my sponsor, I got, not only is it a program that keeps you sober, it makes you, if you apply these principles and if you live the 12 step, you're going to be a better person. I know that I am proud of myself today. I'm proud of myself, you know, and that's new, but it's so valuable. So valuable to me. 3.5 years ago, I might have said that to look like somebody or to appear as if, but I had no self-respect, none. And hopefully you can take what I'm saying and apply it to yourself. I know most spoiled brats don't end up in prison like I did, you know. And I don't think that being from a good family and having all the opportunities that I have had and blowing them and ending up where I did and ending up right here today, it's not because they did a bad job. It's not because something went wrong, you know, that nurture nature argument. It's because I'm an addict. It's because I'm an alcoholic. And it's the great equalizer. It'll bring everyone to their knees. Doesn't matter where you're from, what you do for a living, who your parents are. If you're like me, you're gonna end up in a bad spot, you know, if you continue in your addiction and alcoholism. I'm glad that I don't have to live that way today. I'm glad that when I get upset, which is seldom now, you know, for the last couple years, I'm happy, you know. But when I do get upset, I don't need to go drink. I don't need to pop a pill, you know. I don't need that. I'm not gonna go to the bar and get shit face drunk and call the coke dealer afterwards. I'm not doing that. It's not gonna happen because I know where that ends up. I know where that path leads, and I refuse to do that to myself or to my family. I think that I not only did I use when I was upset or when I created some consequence I couldn't live with and I didn't want to face, I would get, it didn't matter the occasion, as I said before, it didn't matter if I was happy, if I was sad, it didn't matter. I had really low lows and really high highs, you know. I couldn't live in the gray area. It was uncomfortable. So I self-medicated, and today I can say I love every moment, you know. I do have hard times. Sometimes I don't want to study for this test, or I don't want to go to the gym this morning. You know, I don't feel like going on a run. I mean, champagne problems, you know, that's no big deal. I can get over that real quick. I don't have to worry about getting stabbed going to the chow hall in prison. I found happiness and freedom in prison, you know, and that's through this program, and that's through living a healthy life, through stop using, stop drinking, and start applying these steps in my life. It's real simple, you know. Just if you have a problem, you need to address it. You know, I had a problem, so I addressed it. It took way too long, but I did. And then I haven't regretted it, not one time. Not once. Not once. I do think that going to meetings is important for me because I like to hear, it sounds bad, but I like to hear the struggle. You know, I like to hear when people are having a rough time and need help, you know, and because I still need help too, you know, and if I need help, I can call Bill. If I need help, I can talk to Tommy. When other guys go to those meetings looking for help, it makes me happy because I know they're going to find it if they really want it. There's guys in the rooms that they're going to lead you in the right direction, and they'll sit there and read the book with you. They'll tell you what they went through and then how they're making it work in their life. And that's why I continue to go to these AA meetings because I don't have it figured out. Just because I went through the steps once, you know, I've done them twice now, actually, but just because I've been through the steps and I'm sober doesn't mean I'm cured. You know, I tried that before. I bullshitted my way through the steps before and pretended, and that landed me in prison. So I encourage you guys to... If you need help, to ask somebody for help, and don't take matters into your own hands like I did. And thank you. That's it.